This episode of the Out of Bounds podcast is brought to you by Fisher's Keys.
All right, Boston Ski Expo week. If you are going to the show, say hello. I'll be wandering around Thursday, Friday, and Saturday. And then Saturday night, we have the movie premiere at Parlor Skis. If you are not going to that, you should be going to that because it's going to be a blast. You can find your tickets, I think, on First Chair Travel Co.'s Instagram. There's a link, and you can buy the tickets there. I'm assuming also Parlors as well. It's going to be awesome. I'm super excited to see everybody there and to see everybody at the show. So if you see me walking around, I got a ton of stickers. So hit me up, and I'll give you some. What else? So Expo Week, for those of you that aren't in this area, the Boston Ski Expo is like kind of like the official kickoff in New England for a lot of people to the season. It's good timing because this year, like, pretty much everybody's going to be open within the next week or so. But yeah, that's, like I said, it's been a great start so far, at least from my perspective. I think the buzz is really good this year. Everybody's excited, and yeah, I don't know. I think it's going to be good. This is number 78 with Mike Hattrop. Mike is a ski industry legend. He's been in the industry for a couple days now. Just kidding. It's been a long time. He's been in the industry for a long time. He's worked with brands like K2 and now Fisher. And he's super smart, super intelligent. But he's also just a ski legend. Like, he's a pro free skiing legend. Was in Blizzard of Oz. Has skied all kinds of crazy shit. I can't tell you how honored and how lucky I feel to be able to sit down and talk with this guy for a while. I think we had a great conversation. So before we get into that, I just wanted to do a quick sponsor read thing. What do you call these things? Sponsor reads, ad reads, whatever. Cannon Mountain is the sponsor of this episode. So some things you may or may not know. I have some basic facts on Cannon right here that I'm going to read off. Summit elevation for the ski area, 4,080. It's the highest ski area summit in New Hampshire. Base elevation, Cannon is... that's not important. Base elevation starts at 1,900. Longest vertical drop in New Hampshire, that's the important part, 2,180 feet. A lot. 25 miles of trail. Longest run is 2.3 miles. 285 skiable acres. Trails. I think this breakdown is kind of indicative of what Cannon's like. 15% beginner, 52% intermediate, and then 33% expert. That tells you like the kind of skiing that is available at Cannon. Most mountains do not have that high of an expert trail ratio, I guess, if you will. Cannon's fast, it's steep, it's super fun. I can't wait until opening. I'm gonna do my best to be there opening day, which I believe is next Friday, not this Friday. I'm gonna check on that right now. Opening day is 11/23. So if you're gonna be there, let me know. For sure, let's ski Cannon this year. People, hit me up, shoot me an email, adam@outofpodcast.com, and we'll go skiing, because why wouldn't we? Also, lift capacity, I think this is pretty ridiculous. Annual snowfall is around 160 inches, which is pretty great for New England. Lift capacity, 11,000 skiers per hour. That's sick. That's awesome. I mean, that just means that you can be skiing instead of lift lining, which is what you do at a lot of resorts. Anyway, Cannon Mountain, you can find out more on their Instagram or at Cannon, C-A-N-N-O-N-M-T.com. And if you have any questions on the hill, if you have any questions about skiing, if you want to go skiing, like I said, shoot me an email, shoot me a DM, and we'll make it happen. I'm trying to ski with as many new people as I possibly can this year. We're going to get out and get after it. I think I'm maybe going to ski tonight, tomorrow at Mad River, but as soon as Canada's open and ready to go, I'm ready to go. I'm so psyched for this season. I can't even tell you. Like, I can like feel it every time I talk about going skiing. I'm like, I can feel it pulsing through my body. So I'm very excited for that, if you couldn't tell. And shout out to Cannon Mountain for sponsoring this episode of the podcast. Thank you to Mike Hatrup for doing this. I had a great time. And I hope you guys enjoy it. You can find long pause. How many people were like, is he still there? Mike doesn't really have an Instagram. He does have an Instagram, but he doesn't use it. He uses it like, he does not use his Instagram. He does have 69 posts though. So there's that. Mike's Instagram is Mike_Hatrup. You can find him there. You can also find him on the internet. I mean, the dude's a legend. So I hope you guys enjoy the episode. I'm sorry I'm rambling right now. And let me know what you think of this one. Leave us a review on iTunes if you can. 5 stars is my favorite. Anything else, whatever. But 5-star reviews on iTunes always help. And I don't know. We'll talk. Actually, we're going to do another episode this week. So we'll talk to you guys soon. Thanks. Bye. Let's do this thing. So I kind of throw people into the deep end pretty much right away all the time. Like, who are you? Tell the people a little bit about yourself.
Oh,
just a little bit. Not like the whole thing. Just,
we only have an hour.
Yeah. If that. Yeah. Right.
My name's Mike Hatrup. I grew up in Seattle. I've been in Ketchum, Idaho for 25 years, so Sun Valley. And my first job, the longest I held a job prior to my ski industry jobs was a paper route I had when I was 13. I've been in the industry ever since I graduated from college.
Yeah.
And worked for 3 brands and that in 30 years.
That's awesome. You've been in the industry for a minute now.
Yeah.
We'll lead with this. I mean, I got a bunch of questions from people that listen to the show that are like, they want to know about the Blizzard of Oz stuff, obviously, and they want to know like what it's like being you and all this stuff. But I think I kind of want to start with like how, because a lot of people ask this as well, how did you get into the industry and how would you recommend people get into the industry now? Because that seems to be a thing people want to know, but I don't know if people really understand what that means. So
you're assuming that I would recommend people get into the industry.
I might not be assuming that at all. So.
I got into the industry because I was, you know, like probably everybody listening to this, I was a passionate skier, and that's all I wanted to do. Yeah. And it took me 7 years to finish undergrad because I took every winter off and lived in a ski resort. I when I look back on my college career, if you can call it a career, I never went to school more than one quarter straight. So it was one quarter on, one quarter off skiing, one quarter on, summer off, and yeah. So 7 years later, I should be a doctor actually.
That's how much time schooling, man. You must be super fucking smart.
And you know, I got in the industry, I started working for the local rep in Seattle.
Yeah. That seems to be the way a lot of people get into either being a rep or working for a major company or as an athlete, you know, you kind of like you wrench and you do demo events and shit like that for a while. But lately that kind of seems to be changing a little bit. Like people that want to get into the industry, like kind of think that there's like a straight path, I guess, to being in the industry. And I just, I don't know.
I think if you're young and you want to get in the industry, one of the big advantages you have is the whole social media, digital media.
Yeah.
that the people that have been in the industry and older people aren't as savvy. So that's one of the rare instances where as youth you have more advantage than somebody older than you.
Yeah. Yeah, shit's changing pretty quick. Like stuff is, and that's one of the things I just talked to Drummond from Ski the Whites a minute ago, and he was just like, we were talking about how quickly like people have access to information now. Like, so all the new product and stuff like that is like people have it at their fingertips just as soon as you or I do a lot of times. Like, I mean, maybe not as soon, but you know, it's right away. It's immediate.
Oh yeah. Before it's in the shops.
Before it's in the shops, and sometimes before the shops know. So it's pretty insane to see where things go. So I do want to kind of go back a little bit and talk about some of the older stuff, but I want to talk about like what you do now. So we're at Fisher, obviously. What do you do for the company, and how did you find yourself in this position now?
So I'm the U.S. product, product marketing manager.
Okay.
So, and I've been there for just over 2 years.
Okay.
And so I'm basically the U.S. liaison to the Austrians. So I talk with all the product managers over there, and really depends on the product line as to how involved we in the U.S. are. So the categories that are strong over here, like the free ride category especially, and the all mountain category, those are really driven by the U.S. So we have a strong voice with Austria in those categories. So so we really set the direction for those. And that's why the whole new, you know, we have two new collections that came out this year. Those were largely driven by the U.S. Yeah. Now, when it comes to race skis, you know, they're not asking for our opinion there so much. I mean, the top U.S. racers already have a voice.
Yeah.
And, you know, the Austria and Europe has plenty of great World Cup skiers. So all that innovation gets driven from Europe.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's from my understanding, and I don't know, I've never been to Europe in the winter, so I don't know, but it seems like skiing over there is like a major, like a soccer or a baseball here, you know, in a lot of the places.
Oh yeah. Well, especially Austria.
Yeah. Right.
Austria,
exactly.
It is the number one sport. There's nothing that rises above skiing in Austria.
That's so crazy to me, because now it's like, I tell people that I ski, and I remember like as a younger kid being like telling people that I was going skiing, and they'd just be like, what are you talking about? Like, why aren't you playing football? Like, why aren't you playing basketball? You know?
Right.
It's just not that kind of thing here. So it's so weird to hear that that's skiing's the thing over there. So you were previously with K2, right?
Yeah.
What's the difference working with a brand like Fisher to working with a brand like K2?
The first difference is at K2, I was at the mothership.
Yeah,
because everything was decided here, and we reached out to other countries for input. So that's the biggest difference is we're supplying input. But I have to say that K2 never listened to another country, like Austria does with us.
Yeah,
in terms of those categories, you know, the free ride category particularly.
Yeah.
So again, you know, there's a lot of passionate skiers at K2, but at Fisher it borders on religious fanaticism. The devotion to skiing and the passion. And there's, you know, there's, we had a product manager at K2, you know, but there's at Fisher you've got multiple boot product managers, you got multiple ski product managers. So it's a much bigger organization. The sophistication in the factory and the tooling is really, really impressive.
Yeah. I don't know if people realize the kind of company that Fisher is, I guess, and the kind of reach. Like,
they
especially
don't,
here.
For sure. No, because it's a small brand here and it's one of the top global brands.
Yeah, and that's the thing that like people don't, even like when I started working with Fisher, like just doing this podcast, it was like, who again? You know, like what brand is it? And it's like, I know Fisher, like having a ski shop background, like I know Fisher as like a real legitimate brand, but it's always like the race brand or the other brand, you know? So I think it's taking a little while to break into like the regular consumer conscious here. But I think it's on the right track, man. Like the stuff looks fucking great right now.
The product is amazing, and that's one thing that anybody that gets on the stuff will tell you is it's there's no hesitation with the product. The product is as good as it gets, and it's a level above most everything. But
yeah,
just the brand awareness here is it's growing, but it's not what it is globally for sure.
Yeah. So when I was scrolling through your Instagram, I saw like that was a short retirement when you came to work. You put up a post and you were like, that was a short retirement. What made you decide that you wanted to be here, I guess?
I worked outside the industry for a year.
Okay.
And that was okay. It was with a local Ketchum company and a great crew of people, but I missed the industry.
Yeah.
You know, that's one of the things that's special about this industry is you're working with a lot of like-minded people, and there are a lot of people you'd hang out with if you weren't working.
Yeah.
And that's not true with a lot of other jobs, I think.
It's true. Yeah, I think so. Do you have a hard time separating, I guess, have you had a hard time separating the fun part of it and the work part of it, or has it been easy for you?
Separating isn't how.
Like, I mean, so people look at a job like a job, right? Like, the ski industry's not like that so much, but, like, I feel it sometimes where, like, you're doing a lot of work, and sometimes, like, the monotony and the work of the job kind of takes away from the fun. Like, it takes away your enthusiasm, I guess, about it sometimes. Not a lot, and, I mean, now, like, this has been a good way for me to kind of expand that, but for a lot of people, like, that's the complaint. It's like, you know, you don't want to work where you also want to have fun.
Right. Well, I don't find that.
Yeah.
Yeah, because I never find it monotonous. It's so fast paced and seasonal, so it's changing all the time. And we're always trying to build something better, which is always fun.
Yeah.
Because anytime we can put a bigger smile on your face, that means we've done it as well.
Yeah.
So, yeah, fortunately, it hasn't gotten monotonous that I've felt like, you know what, I got to get out of the industry so I can enjoy skiing.
Yeah.
You know, because that's...
You're still skiing a ton now.
Yeah, I'm skiing. Yeah. I mean, I walk to the lift at home, so...
That's awesome.
Yeah.
So you get as much skiing as you want.
Well, no, I mean, I still have to work, but...
Yeah.
But it's... But I also have some flexibility too. That if it's powder day, I'm not sitting at the desk.
Yeah, you're
at
skiing.
Least not. You know, I'll go ski for a few hours and then I'll work late that day. But
right,
you don't miss powder days because of work.
Yeah, I think that's going to be good for a lot of people to hear, because that's one of the things that I kind of get asked a lot is like, how do you keep it fun? Because for a lot of, especially like kids in the shop, like at those like entry level jobs, it's hard a lot of times to still find the fun in it, I guess. So I guess to hear that after doing it for a little bit now, you're still having fun with it. You're like, you still enjoy it.
Yeah, and I don't get yet so far anyways, I don't get tired about talking about skiing. Because people will say that, come up to me and ask me, you know, people that this is outside of work hours.
Yeah.
Ask me about skis and somebody will be listening and then, don't you get tired about talking about skiing?
Yeah, and you don't.
Like, you know what? Fortunately, I don't. But when I do, it'll be time to do something different.
I think, yeah, and I think that's the right attitude to have, right? Like, I mean, if you got to do what you're enjoying doing. What made you leave this industry for a year?
Things were imploding at K2.
Yeah.
When I was there, and
they went through
basically all
I'm like kind of putting the timing together in my head, I guess, for what was going on there then. And
yeah, you know, so. The entire team I worked with was gone from K2.
Yeah,
I mean, there's not one person there from sales or marketing that was there when I was there.
Yeah,
and that was true a year after I left.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, it's a weird thing, and I think that's another thing that's kind of changing in this industry is like just the organization of a lot of the brands and the people that kind of used to be there. And you're kind of starting to see a shift, I guess, in a lot of the companies now.
Yeah. I mean, and all brands go through different eras of people, and it was, you know, and K2 is a great brand still.
Yeah.
But it, you know, it's, it went on a more rapid transformation than most evolutions do.
Yeah. Yeah, and especially when you're like a pretty integral part of it, it's kind of your choice, I guess, to be out when you're out, you know?
Yeah.
So, I'm excited to kind of see what happens over the next few years. Do you feel like things are, I mean, obviously ski technology and boot technology has changed a ton over the past 10 years or something like that. Do you feel like we're still kind of in that, like that every year something's changing in a major way cycle? Because it seemed like for a while when Rocker came out, we were in this like, every year something was changing, right? Like the first year was like everything had to be Rocker. And then the next year it was like, we need less Rocker. And then they're just kind of changing profiles. Do you feel like we're still in that like experimental phase of a lot of the stuff?
No, I think that's for sure that's slowing down. Yeah. I mean, there was an explosion. And we'll look back on the last 15, 20 years as the golden era of ski revolution.
You think so?
Absolutely. I mean, if you look at if you took a boot from 30 years ago, okay, you'd go skiing it pretty much like you do now.
Yeah.
The materials are better. For sure, the design is a little bit better, but it's not that different.
Right.
And if you go take a boot from or ski from 30 years ago, you suck.
Yeah.
You're not going to be as good. I mean, when you think about it, first we had shape came along, and then width. And then Rocker, and now Taper, and so all these things completely changed not just the skis and how easy it was, but the way people ski. Nobody was going 50 miles an hour in powder on skinny skis. I don't care who you were.
Yeah.
So I think there's no question there's been more design changes and benefits in the last 15, 20 years than any other period. And now I think there's a lot of refinement in all those. I mean, we're still, you know, the first Rocker skis that we made at K2, when you looked at the pontoon, it had huge Rocker. And then there was a tip on top of that.
Yeah.
It's like, wait a second, why do you have a tip?
Yeah.
So, you know, there's been a ton of refinement over the years. And that's why, you know, there's so many different directions you can go with skis now too. There's some really different personalities in skis and ski brands, whereas you didn't have that distinction 20 plus years ago either.
Yeah.
You had a slalom ski, giant slalom ski, a soft slalom, and you know, everything was a derivative of one of those two.
Yeah. I think that's a thing too that we kind of take for granted, even just like package skis, like that didn't really exist like they exist now, you know, like that's a huge part of the market. Like that wasn't really as much of a thing from what I understand as it is now. Or like, it just seems like stuff's getting a lot more specialized and, like you said, refined. So I guess we'll kind of see what happens with it. Do you think that's going to happen with boots or no?
Well, we're seeing it happen in boots too. So take 20 years ago, boots, you had touring boots and you had alpine boots.
Yeah.
And it was black or white.
Yeah.
You know, the touring boots were great to walk in and they sucked to ski in.
Yeah.
And alpine boots were great to ski in, they sucked to walk in. And now you've got every little slot between those two extremes filled in. You know, with a boot that's dead in the middle, that you can go tour in and still ski in the resort, and you can lean towards the alpine side of that or lean towards the touring side of that, and there's a boot that will fit your needs there. So boots have gotten way more comfortable, way more adaptable, and the designs, certainly in the touring category, have improved dramatically.
Yeah, definitely in the touring category for sure. Like even the last couple of years, it's like it seems like everybody, and I think obviously I'm biased, but I think Fisher has the best kind of do everything touring boot right now on the range, or the best skiing one right now.
Yeah, that's, you know, and I don't say that very often because there's a lot of great products out there, but that boot is pretty unique in that it's lighter and has more range of motion than my touring boot of 10 years ago.
Yeah.
And it skis way better.
Yeah.
And I thought, this is going to be a great kind of high performance heavy metal touring boot.
Yeah.
But I won't ski on it at the resort so much. But that was my everyday boot for the last 2 years. And I skied race skis with it, and and toured with it. And granted, I have a lighter touring boot. I'll tour in the Traverse, but but I've also toured in that boot, and
it's still pretty great.
Yeah. So it is a unique boot there, because nobody else quite has that balance.
No, I don't think the performance is as good in a lot of boots, and I don't. I'm not like talking shit, but like there's just like a lot of people just kind of latch onto the idea that you can just. And honestly, like Fisher had that boot a few years ago. The old Ranger wasn't the same as the new Ranger. Like it just didn't. It was heavy, didn't ski nearly as well. And I think there's a lot of companies that are still in that world. Whereas like the next step is kind of where we're at now with this new Ranger Free Series. Like I think it's really really good. Do you? The last few years has been like a huge time of growth for backcountry skiing and people getting into backcountry skiing.
Yeah.
How do you feel about that? And how do you think that's going to change the industry?
I mean, it's the one part of our sport that's growing.
Yeah.
Is backcountry skiing. And I think it's great. I mean, some people are bummed out because their, you know, favorite stashes are getting skied quickly, but that just means you got to walk a little further or find something different. There's still plenty of room out there, and it depends on where you live too, but you know, I think the more people that get out in the backcountry, the better it is for really saving all those wild spaces too.
Yeah,
you know, because the more people, because if you don't go back there, you don't care about it so much.
Yeah,
but if it's one of your favorite spots and there's development coming or whatever, then you stand up and take notice more and fight to keep those places. So I think it's a really good thing for, you know, the wilderness in general.
Yeah, I think it is too, and I think you kind of hear both sides of the argument where like people are like, no, it's bad. Like, why would you want to ski? I hear it more with mountain biking, I guess, than I hear it with skiing, where it's like, it's not good to be out there. Like, you're beating up the trails, you're beating up the woods. And it's like, I think people kind of have that, like that outside view that don't use those areas. You know, it's coming from like an unexperienced perspective, I guess.
Yeah. Cause mountain bikes don't beat up trails. I mean, horses are way harder on trails than bikes are.
Yeah.
And yeah, I think the more people, you know, and I of course want to go for a mountain bike ride or a ski tour and not see anybody else.
Yeah.
But
me too.
You know, I think there's always places you can do that too. And again, the more people that we have out there, the better chance we have of saving it or developing new trails.
Mm. Yeah. Like, and it goes again, like everybody's complaining about their local hill being busier and busier because of like the Epic Pass and the Icon Pass and all this new stuff. And that's a way to kind of get out of that, you know. It's a way to get out of those busy weekends. Like, you still go skiing, just go in the backcountry, you know, like go for a tour.
Yeah.
Have you noticed from your perspective, like an effect that those passes have had on the industry as a whole? Do you think it's a good or a bad thing?
They've definitely had an effect.
Yeah.
Because there's people are skiing more.
Yeah.
And you know, I don't feel it at home. Sun Valley's been a part of Mountain Collective.
Okay.
But we don't have any lines.
Yeah.
Ever.
Yeah. And I mean, I think
you might have a line, maybe you wait 10 minutes on a powder day at Christmas break.
Yeah.
In Sun Valley, but otherwise we don't have any lines. So, but we're part of the Epic Pass this year, so we'll see if that changes. I certainly heard stories of some of the resorts that had Icon or Epic, and they're going, ooh, that was a mistake. There's too many people here.
Yeah, I don't know if it's an issue of preparedness, like if the mountains and the towns themselves need to be more prepared for this kind of thing, or if it's an issue of like, this is just really a bad fucking idea, you know, for some places. Because some places I feel like kind of need to be left alone, you know, like destination spots that people like dream about when they're little kids, like putting that on a pass that you get at some bonus deal, like Jackson Hole, because that's always the one that people are talking about.
Right.
You know, it's like those are the lines and the pictures that go viral online. Like, I think a lot of those places maybe should be left off of it, but at the same time, it's hard to say, like, if ski resorts are losing money all the time, it's hard to say, take less money. Like,
I don't think the resorts are losing money.
No, that's always what they say, at least. That's what a lot of them will say.
Well, certainly those big ones aren't.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's probably. But so I don't know. Do you think it's better with it or without it then? It's. I know it's probably hard to say, especially if you haven't seen it in your home resort yet.
Yeah, but. I mean, on one hand, I think it's great for skiers because you get to ski a whole bunch of different areas.
Yeah.
You know, and that's part of the fun of skiing is going to traveling and going to see different places and not skiing the same hill over and over again. So the idea, because usually if you're a dedicated skier, you get a season pass. And then you're locked into that resort all year because you spent all your money, and so that's where you ski.
Yeah.
And so I think it's cool to be able to go. You know, we had Mountain Collective, my family did, and Mountain Collective passes, and we went on a spring road trip that we wouldn't have been able to do otherwise. I mean, with two kids and my wife and I, and spending $100-$150 per person per day skiing other areas, not going to happen.
Yeah,
and we got to go ski. You know, the kids skied Telluride and Aspen and Snowbird, and it was, you know, it's pretty cool.
Yeah.
So, I think they're a good thing. They're getting people out there.
Yeah.
And yeah.
I don't know. I try to be positive about it too, I guess, you know, because I feel like it's never going away. What makes me a little nervous is the fact that, like, every year there's more resorts on these passes. And it makes me nervous for the small resorts that you used to just, like, go to. And I'm not an old person, but I feel like an old person when I say this. Like, but it's like sometimes you just want to go to your local hill and just it still be there, you know?
Right.
The same way as when it was before. Not maybe, like, things can change, but I think that's what the pessimist in me, I guess, is concerned about that.
Yeah, and certainly the monopolization of it is somewhat concerning too, because like you said, the big guys are getting bigger.
Yeah. And why? And if you're a resort that's been like a small resort that's been struggling, or a medium sized resort, especially in New England, I think we see it a lot because, like, the bad winters seem to be coming more often here. It really affects you. If Vail comes to you and is like, here's a big check, it's going to be pretty hard to say no, I think. So,
oh, yeah.
But yeah, no, it's, we'll see what happens, I guess. All right. I don't want to take up a ton of your time, so I actually have a bunch of questions that people asked. So we'll do some of those. I'll pause it. All right. So first question is, Season Pass Sales wants to know, did you or any of the guys you worked with know how huge or iconic Blizzard of Oz was going to be when you filmed it, or did you guys just think you were having a good time?
Well, we were having a good time for sure. Yeah. No, none of us had any clue that it would be as big as it was. We knew we had something special because we'd never, with any of Stump's previous movies, you know, we weren't parked at one place that long and had that big of a log of footage. So we knew it was going to be something special, and it was unique because we were in Europe and all the other stuff we'd done was at ski resorts in the U.S. So, but no. Did I think I was going to be talking about it 30 years later? Definitely not.
Yeah, that's got to be great. Like, do people, like, come up to you and, like, recognize you, like, now?
Yeah.
Really? Like, all the time?
Not all the time. You know, it's not, I'm pretty anonymous, certainly outside of the ski world.
Yeah.
But, you know, you get in ski resorts and you know, or ski shows, that kind of thing, and certainly people do.
Hmm. Do you get, so how old are your kids?
14 and 16.
Oh, cool. Are they big skiers?
They're ripping skiers.
Really? That's awesome. Yeah. What's that like? And did you have to like force them into it, or they were just like all psyched on it from the get?
No, they were psyched from, I won't say from day one. I mean, they liked it from the start, but I can remember, you know, the day my son really clicked is the day he was 5.
Yeah.
And he skied for a couple of years and he liked it, but it wasn't, he always wanted to ski by himself. He actually wanted to ride the lift by himself, but he was, you know, this tiny little 5-year-old and like, no, actually, you're in the lift with us. And it wasn't until we put him in ski lessons and the ski instructor can't ski with everybody, so he got to ride by himself. And he was, That's then awesome. he was stoked. And I remember that first day I went to pick him up after lessons, and he goes, I'm going to take another run. And I said, the chair's closed. And he goes, well, then I'll go on the magic carpet. I said, that's closed too. So he says, well, then I'll hike. And I said, okay.
That's awesome. That's got to be such a great moment as a parent to be like, especially like for something that you've been in for so long, like for your kid to just be like, I'm super psyched on this, you know?
Oh, yeah. No, for sure. And with both kids, you know, you knew it was going to be, you know, when they're finally good enough to ski with you and then too good, you knew that was coming. But I thought it was going to come a little bit later and last a little longer. I mean, both my kids surpassed me.
No shit.
Probably when they were 12, I think they both beat me in a race course. And so.
That's awesome. That's really cool. All right. Kelslef22, is her Instagram handle, wants to know, what are you most excited about for Fisher this season?
The thing I'm most excited about is the two groups of skis we put together. I mean, we had, cause these were skis that I started working on, with the whole US team. And of course the Austrians, as well, but the Ranger collection, the FR collection and the TI collection were completely revamped this year. And same with the RC1 86 GT. So all those skis won a ton of awards this year that we haven't had in the past. Mm. So that whole collection was really fun to put together with the US group and the Austrians, and to see that acceptance from the market is super cool. So
yeah, it's a big change. Like it's they ski like it's a totally different ski, same name for the Ranger stuff, but
yeah. And that, like, and that was the idea now, like. Yeah, exactly. So you skied on them, and that was the idea is let's give these another gear.
Yeah,
you know, because they were all good skis before. People liked those skis, but We put metal in all the TIs now, and so and there's a more graduated story with rocker and taper.
Yeah.
And so you get skis that have that supple power and ease, but are super stable.
Yeah.
And you can really stand on them and charge. So it's fun to see that come together.
It also looks a lot cleaner. Like the line is just simple looking, but it's nice to look at. It's not offensive in any way, but it still has some appeal, I think, to a lot of the younger demographic before that was maybe like, it's a little weird with the shapes and the like weird color blocking. And like now it's just like they're black. They have a hit of color. They look good. I think that's people talk about color a lot, you know, and I don't think it really matters, but it sells product.
Oh, it does matter. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, nobody wants to admit that that's important to them, the graphics are, but, you know,
it's
it
important.
Is.
Nobody wants to ski on dumb looking shit, for sure. Like, they want to ski on good looking stuff, even if it's like not, even if they're not saying it, I think.
Yeah, for sure. We find that in focus groups, nobody admits that. They don't. They say the graphics don't really matter that much.
Yeah.
But when they're choosing skis, it definitely matters.
Yeah. Yeah. Do you find that people are like hesitant to give you real opinions? Like, can you tell the difference when somebody's like really excited about the way a ski looks?
This is before I started working for K2. I was working at a Labor Day sale.
Yeah.
And this gal comes in and she goes, "What are those?" Pointing to we had. Two skis, a KVC, which was hot pink, which was the first hot pink men's ski that was out there. And then we had a teal one that was a softer slalom that was better for this gal because she wasn't very heavy. And she goes, looks at the bright pink KVCs and goes, "What are those?" And I go, "Oh, that's, you know, that's a slalom ski. It's, you know, blah, blah, blah. This is the ski that would be better for you, this teal ski, blah, blah, blah." And she's nodding her head, and all the things I'm saying about the teal ski. And then when I get done with the spiel, she grabs the pink ski and walks out.
Yeah.
So
dude, people don't give a shit. They want what they want. They know what they want. That's the thing too, is like, so a lot of time I'll be selling skis and I'm just like doing the same thing. You know, you're doing the pitch. You're like, this is great. This is great. This is great. And you kind of get lost in the pitch for a second. And then like you realize that they're like doing the same thing. They're just nodding their head, not really paying attention to you. And then they're like, so what about this whatever ski over here? You know, that like clearly graphics the only thing that's making them happen. But
yeah,
it's important. It's an important part. And it's a part of the ski industry that I think the industry hasn't wanted to acknowledge as much for a while too, but that a lot of other industries do. Like when Nike comes out with a new shoe, they make sure that it looks good, right? Like even if it's a new technology or whatever, the ski industry is kind of notorious for just like, this is the new product. It doesn't this is what it looks like. We're going to make it look like this, I think. And I'm glad to see that as of late, it seems like they're starting to care more about what stuff looks like.
Yeah, well, and I think the industry has for a long time because look at how ski graphics have evolved over the last 20 years too. They were all really simple before.
Yeah.
And then they went all over the board with, you know, art and wild stuff and ace, you know, graphics that spread over two skis, and you still see a lot of that, and a lot of the graphics have simplified again.
Yeah.
But I think the ski industry's always paid attention to that.
Cares enough, yeah. Yeah, maybe it's just me.
Because we all know it sells skis.
Yeah, for sure. We definitely do.
Doesn't matter how good your ski is. If it looks ugly, it's not going to do well.
Yeah.
It needs to look good and ski good.
I guess it's just because I see some, like, there's a few every year that are, like, ripping good skis, and then I just think they look like garbage, you know? And then, we know what on the floor, like, at least hindsight's 2020, right? Like, we know on the floor what's going to do well based on what everybody else kind of puts out, and it still seems like there's just a lot of duds graphically. So I always wonder if people actually just don't pay attention, like if sometimes the graphic designers are just like, fuck it, but maybe they just think it works and they have no idea.
I think those ones you don't like are probably somebody thought they were cool,
right?
You know, wasn't your demographic or whatever, and maybe somebody does think those are cool,
right?
You know, consumers too.
Right.
But, or it's just a graphic and
they just tried
development
something.
Team that's out of touch, which happens too.
That's possible. All right, let's do one more question here. We'll do an email one. Oh, this is a good one. All right, Christian T wants to know, how would you recommend I get into backcountry skiing? I've never done it before. But I'm looking to start this year.
So if I was going to introduce somebody to backcountry, I'd do two things. One, go hire a guide.
Yeah.
Because hiring a guide, there's so many things. People think the only thing to learn with backcountry skiing is avalanche hazard. So they take an avalanche course and then they go ski tour. But if you hire a guide, number one, they're going to teach you how to set a good track and a safe track and teach you how to navigate. And those are all really important things. And just setting a good track can make the experience so much better. When I went through the guide courses and learned how to set a track, it was all of a sudden it's like going uphill was fun.
Yeah.
And you were trying to put in a really cool track. And I pay more attention and take more pleasure out of my uphill tracks than the downhill tracks.
Really?
Yeah. So I think hiring a guide is a great thing to do. And obviously you need to find some friends that are into it too. And the other thing I would try and do is spend some time, you know, walking uphill at the resort. Yeah. Find a resort that has an uphill policy, because you're going to learn a lot there. And the nice thing about that is conditions don't need to be safe.
Yeah.
I mean, they do, but they are at the resort, right? It's a groomer.
Right.
So it's always good skiing because you get a perfectly groomed slope if you go, you know, first thing in the morning. You get to be familiar with your skins and your equipment and how it works. And you don't need a partner. So you can go on your own. So it's, you know, and I tour up the hill at home too, just for fitness, because it's quick and easy and I don't need to worry about the hazard or the conditions or a partner. I put my tunes in and tune out and So, but those are the two things, I think. Certainly a guide. It'll be well worth what you can take away from that.
I'd imagine so. I think just going with somebody that has some experience too is like, that's, you learn so much from that. I can't imagine what you would take out of a, like an actual day spent with a guide, like in a situation, in stuff that you wouldn't be comfortable with by yourself necessarily.
Right. And you can, and that's why I say guide, because if you go with somebody else that goes a lot,
yeah,
they probably learned from somebody else that went a lot.
Yeah.
And when you look at the tracks that are set by most people,
yeah,
you get the people that are experienced backcountry skiers don't know how to set a track.
Yeah.
Because nobody ever taught them. It's not their fault. They learned from their buddy who didn't know how to set a track, and he learned from his buddy who didn't know how to set a track. So,
yeah, you know, you look at,
So again, I didn't learn a lot of that till I got into the guide courses.
Yeah. That's awesome. Yeah, I think that's good information for a lot of people, because you're right. Like, a lot of people just think, yeah, you take an AVI-1 and fucking right, good to go. You know, that's all you need to do. So I think that's awesome for people here. Well, cool. Thank you for doing this, man.
Yeah.
I appreciate it. Thanks for having me. Cool. Thanks for listening, guys.
All right. That was episode number 78 with Mike Catrup. I hope you guys enjoyed it. I know I did. Feel super honored to get the chance to talk with Mike. Thank you to Cannon Mountain for sponsoring this episode of the show. You can go to canonmt.com to learn more. You can also follow them on Instagram. Why do I never have anybody's Instagram ready? It's just Cannon Mountain on Instagram. Hit them up. Opening day is 11/23. Get psyched. Hopefully I'll see you guys out there. And I hope everybody's getting some skiing in. Hope you're listening to this while skiing or on the way to skiing. That's the way to do it. Thank you to Canon again for sponsoring the show. Thank you to Fisher Skis, as always, for being our title sponsor. Let's get it going. I'll talk to you guys soon. Next episode is either going to be Andrew Drummond from Ski the Whites, or it's going to be, we're doing kind of like a round table podcast style with Till I Die, First Chair, Parlor, and somebody else. I don't know who at the moment. It's not really. I'm kind of like at Ryan's mercy a little bit here, which is awful to say and think about. Sounds good. Talk to you guys soon. Thanks. Bye.